for supporting Kauai Community Radio, the station that loves you. And this is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. And I'm really excited about our show today. We are the first hour, our biggest focus is going to be with the Division of Forestry and Wildlife. They called in, and DOFA, this is what their acronym tends to be. And we're really excited to work with Kauai Community Radio to talk to the people and hear what questions people have about doing the rodenticide. That means the elimination of the rats and the rodents, somewhat with poison. We'll go into that a little bit on Lehua Island. And so I've been really blessed. The nonprofit called Island Conservation that is focused on preventing extinctions, and in this case, the extinctions they're preventing is the seabirds. I have Kauai's person, Mele Kalsa, kind of an extended part of the KKCR family, actually, and then Patty Bio. Let's see if I'm saying that right. And she's over here. She came over special from Oahu to be talking to us, and pretty soon we'll have Josh, the manager from the Division of Forestry and Wildlife, on. Our own person, Sherry Mann, who has organized all this. She's feeling a little under the weather, so she'll be listening in. And we have Shane from the United States Department of Agriculture from Hilo, who will also be on. But I want you, as the listeners, to be thinking of what questions you might have about what is coming up. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the general plan update and a few other things, but most of our focus is going to be on this topic for the first hour, and we'll be talking about, you know, kind of whatever you want. There's so many topics up right now in this second hour. So Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Kauai Store, Betty Jean Nativio, and Howley Girl.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Betty Jean Nativio, artist for hire, teaching both art and cooking, including the School of Chocolate Art for all ages and abilities. Multi-art mediums, including reverse glass painting, available for events, signage, custom gifts, and more. More information at bettyjeannativio.com or 808-652-3781.
Howley Girl Island Suites presents The Tea Room in the Gallery, located in Kinipopo Shopping Center in Kapa'a, offering full-service high tea and desserts. More information at 808-822-2253.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio, the station that loves you. And Marshall, are you on there?
I'm on here, Felicia. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really great. And before we get started on our Lehua Island discussion, I just want to share with the listeners that I did go again to the Planning Commission meeting today and, you know, really honoring the tremendous amount of effort and work that the Planning Department, the Planning Commission have put into looking at our long-range plan. And it, you know, feathers in with what we're talking about here when we look at our birds and how we keep our wildlife, especially our endemic animals and indigenous animals, safe and strong. All of that is a form of planning, and it's not always an easy thing to work with. And I would say today is one of the later meetings of the general plan update before the commission. But they are going to pause a little bit for about a month. The next meeting will be either April 25th, which is Tuesday, or more likely they'll do a special meeting on April 27th. But what they are doing, because they want to take time to read all the mail, like the amount of community input is is there's more community input than there is of that 600-page document that they have that is the plan itself.
Is there a lot of input coming in late at the last minute?
Well, these guys have only been on, the Planning Commission's been on it for about 6 weeks, maybe 7 weeks, and it's a lot of work.
Okay.
So they're looking at that, and then they have on April 10th, which is a Monday, from 2 to 5 at Ha Cafe, the planners are going to go there and have an informal happy talk story where people can come in and talk to them.
Nice.
And be able to share, and they'll have the plans there, and people can look at it. And if you have a strong vision that you need to communicate, you can still contact the planning department. And like Marie Williams, mwilliams@kauai.gov, for example, you can still get a hold of them and work at it. And I think that what I heard come through so strong, it's kind of the birds on the rocks and the islands have the same problem that the residents do here, is that, and everybody in this room, we all weren't born here. Creatures from somewhere else come in, and sometimes it starts to crowd out who's ever there. And I think that, like, what really came up heavy today was affordable housing, traffic. I mean, the people who already have a house seem to be the ones who are complaining about traffic.
Right.
And the people who didn't have a house were the ones that were complaining more about not having a house. And the people who have a house, maybe they don't want any more houses because it's more traffic.
Right.
And, you know, again, it was a half hour for me to get from Hanalei to Princeville.
What?
And that's about 3 miles. So instead of going 10 miles an hour, that means it's going 1 mile for every 10 minutes. So, like, it's interesting.
You know where they're thinking about putting that Hanalei Lodge along
Princeville
that ridge?
Lodge.
Princeville Lodge, yep, there. You know what? They could actually put a road in from, take it from the fishing pier in Hanalei, cross the river, up the ridge, and into the back way of Princeville.
You might get smacked for that. But that actually has come up before.
You're kidding.
No, that has come up before because you could cross over a little bit further up the river. But, that's not an easy sell.
Yeah.
Okay. So we are also expecting in fact, I am trolling for our Josh. What's Josh's last name from the Vision of Forestry and Wildlife?
Josh Atwood.
Josh Atwood, please call in at 826-7771. And we will be hearing from Shane also, who's going to be kind of connected in with Josh. So they are going to be on one line together, which means I have another line for if callers have questions, they can call in and talk and answer. And so we have some scientists here. So Patty, can you tell us about who you are?
Sure. So my name is Patty Bio, and I am the Island Conservation Hawaii Program Manager, and I'm based out of Honolulu. And as you've mentioned before, Island Conservation is a nonprofit organization, and our mission is to prevent extinctions by removing alien species from islands.
Okay. And Mele Kalsa, you want to tell us a little bit about you, too?
Hi, my name is Mele, and I'm from Kauai. I live here in Lihue, and I'm really excited about this project. I've been working with Island Conservation for about a year now to help them forward their mission of preventing extinctions.
So the listener knows, and that I have a clearer understanding, your nonprofit is essentially like a contractor, right? You are a contractor underneath the Division of Forestry and Wildlife. Is that correct?
So we are partnering with the Division of Forestry and DLNR on this project, specifically on Lehua.
And you're based out of Honolulu?
Correct.
So can you give us some examples of some of the other projects you've done?
Yeah, so island conservation works in many different parts of the world. So our office here is under the North America division, and we have done work eradicating alien species, for instance, from the Palmyra Atoll and the Seychelles Island and many others around the world in South America and other parts as well.
So those are in the Pacific, those islands you just mentioned?
So Palmyra is part of the Hawaiian
chain.
Yeah.
Up in the archipelago. Okay, because I don't know that island so well.
We work all over the world. So, yeah, we have a number of projects in the Caribbean. The one she mentioned, Desecheo, is over by Puerto Rico. We've worked in the Galapagos island chain and some islands off of Chile and Mexico and North America along the western coast there.
And for the listener who might have just tuned in, the Division of Forestry and Wildlife is going to be having a meeting on Kauai. Do you have the time and the date of that meeting? It's going to be in Kekaha.
Yeah, we are having a public meeting in Kekaha on April 3rd. That's a Monday. And that would be from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Kekaha Community Center. And so there we'll be, again, presenting this project and receiving comments from people.
My sense is, from talking to Sherry Mann, is they're really wanting very, very deeply for people to come. And to be able to really get a good understanding, and that they are going to also be videotaping it so people can maybe be watching it live on Hawike on Channel 53. I don't know if they have that. Do you know if they have that totally organized to have the live presentation?
I think it's still in the works. We're definitely hoping to reach as many people as possible, and Hawike is a really good platform for that. So hopefully it all works out. As many people as can come to the meeting, that would be great. We just want to get the word out and get people's feedback.
Well, I know I sent out a number of emails to my Fisher friends. And Marshall, did you get a hold of them?
We're working on that, Felicia.
Okay. So, Millie, I'm looking, the main way when you go in and try and remove rats is the main thing you're going after, correct? How many rats do you guys estimate that are there?
Populations of rats are really difficult to say precisely how many they are. They fluctuate a lot depending on food sources, so there can be some great variation depending on what time you go in and measure the population. One thing that is important for this project specifically, talking about rodent eradication, is that the number, as counterintuitive as that may seem, is not as important as the principles that guide the eradication. So the most important thing for this to be successful is to follow some basic principles of eradication, and one of those is that we have to spread the bait and the toxicant to every single rat territory on the island. So it's more important to know that the rats are in every corner of the island, and for us to deliver the bait appropriately to all of the island.
So, I was on the radio and I had a caller call in, and my dog was bleeding out and she did die. It was terrible. I went home and got her, and the vet said that she had eaten rat poison, and I didn't have any on the property. And he said, well, maybe somebody gave it to her, or maybe she ate a rat that had eaten the rat poison, because she was a small dog, and it was a really awful death. And it was bleed out. And is it the same kind of poison?
So the rodenticides that are being proposed for this particular project are anticoagulants, which is...
It's a bleed out.
It's a common rodenticide used for pest control around our houses and other urban infrastructure. So the way they act, it is by working on the clotting system and preventing it from clotting appropriately. So, in other words, they fail to clot the blood, yeah.
So they bleed to death. Mm-hmm. It comes out of their little bottom. That's what did happen, at least with my dog. So when I hear it, my instinct, like I don't want any rat poison anywhere near my property because I don't want to have that happen. When these rats eat this and die, will the birds come in and eat the rats?
Right, and that is a very important question, and it's something that we obviously are very aware of and worried about. And for operations like this, using rodenticide, there is an inherent risk to a non-target species, meaning the species that we're not trying to eradicate. Those risks are evaluated in the environmental assessment document that is now out for public consultation. The specifics of Lehua, most of the birds that are on Lehua are seabirds, and we know enough of the biology of seabirds to know that they feed out at sea. Live on live prey. They feed on live prey, fish and squid and others. So they're not likely to eat any
rat.
Any bait or a dead rat. So they're not scavengers. So based on what we know of their biology, we understand that the risks to seabirds, which is the majority of the birds on the island, is very low.
And then what about like the little crabs and things like that that are running around? Will they go after that bait?
Potentially, yeah. So crabs and invertebrates are also a group of concern. They are laid out in the environmental assessment.
You want to kill them or you don't want
we
to kill
do not.
Them? Okay.
No. The only thing that we are trying to eradicate is the rats. And we're trying to minimize the risks to every other non-target species as much as we can.
And so it seemed to me that this happened about 4 or 5 years ago.
So there was an attempt to eradicate rats from Lehua back in 2009, and it failed.
So how do you know it failed?
Because we can detect rats back on Lehua.
So did it seem like any of them died?
Yes. So
could you tell like how much of them depopulated? And when I was a kid, I had pet rats, and they are incredibly prolific.
Right.
So they can go from 200 to 300 in probably 5 or 6 months if there is no predator for them.
Correct.
So you're going to bring snakes and cats over, right?
No, absolutely not. rats, as you said, are very prolific, and they can recolonize an island very quickly, even if only a few individuals are left behind. And that's why the principles of eradication are so important in our planning of this operation and others like this. You have to ensure that the bait is available to every single individual and that they have enough of it to receive a lethal dose. So
a lethal dose?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so the name of the rodenticide, I'm looking at it. Can you say it for me?
Yeah, so there's currently on the EA, there are two alternatives that include two types of rodenticide. One of them is called difasinone.
That's the one I'm looking at, okay.
And the second one is called bradyphocum.
Okay, and what's the difference between them? And how long does that poison hang out? Like what does it kind of go neutral after a while in the dead mouse?
So the difference between them is how specifically how they act physiologically. They're both anticoagulants, so they work in many of the same ways. There are differences in the toxicity of the toxicant to non-target species. So difasinone is known to be less toxic to birds and crabs and other non-target species. Bradyphocum is known to be a little more toxic. They also have differences in how long they stay within an individual that have consumed it or in the environment. For difasinone, once it hits the soil, it takes as little as 30 days for it to decompose into CO2 and water.
30 days.
Mm-hmm.
So that's still, if it's floating in the water 30 days, like would a fish eat it?
So if it won't stay in the water column. It will sink to the bottom of the ocean and it will be decomposed in the soil. So,
but like would a lobster eat it or something? I mean, there's all kinds of things right there with it. Like something else could eat it down below.
It is a potential, and again, we are aware of the inherent risks, and we try to minimize those risks as much as we can.
And I believe I have Josh on the phone. Are you there? Josh? Hello?
Hello?
Are you there?
I'm a caller. I have a question.
Okay. All right. Hi.
Hi. First off, that woman, Patty, is that right?
Yes.
On behalf of you, Patty, I wanted to apologize to you, Felicia, for the horrific and tragic and unnecessary death of your dog died as a result of some rat poison inadvertently getting into your dog's digestive system. I'm very sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
And then the other question I had is, like, so if the problem is that the rats are prolific, why can't they just, put little rat prophylactics on the island or sterilize them or something? I mean, why do you have to inject poison into the living environment and then hope that the inherent risks of injecting poison into the living system won't be catastrophic? Thank you for your...
And hold on to that. So, Patty, what about that? Is there some sort of fertility thing that you can put out there in the baits?
So there are, on the document as well, the EA, there are several...
Environmental assessment.
Correct, uh-huh. Yeah. So the environmental assessment document, there are potential alternatives that were considered but dismissed, and that's one of them. And the reason for it being dismissed is that... hormonal treatments, such as the one the caller is proposing, and I would like to thank you very much for the question and your engagement with the process and interest in learning more about it. The issue with that particular alternative is that it's never been tested in a field environment in at an island as big as Lihua. What has been used is for control in urban areas. And as we have said before in the show, it is very important for an eradication perspective. If you really want to get all of the rats away from the island, you have to make sure that you achieve...
All of them.
Yeah, exactly.
So I would wonder also, you called it a hormonal treatment, so that's like a birth control. I wonder if the birds could eat that too and have a similar reaction to it.
So much like the rodenticide operation, using hormonal control has its own inherent risks. And if that was being put forward, it would also have to be assessed in terms of the risks that you could pose to non-target species.
So were either of you around for the last effort at doing it?
We were not. Neither Melly or I, and actually Island Conservation was not involved with that.
Who did the last effort?
So Wildlife Services.
Wildlife Services from the state?
Mm-hmm.
So do you know why it didn't work?
So we have an independent study that looked at the potential causes for it having failed, and there are likely more than one specific that contributed to the failure. One of the things that it pointed out to is the time of the year that the operation was conducted. They conducted it during the winter, and
rain, or
yeah, so there's plenty of rain, and we know that the rats, if they have alternative food sources, they may not be as likely to eat the bait that is being put out. So we want to target the rat population when the island is as dry as possible so that they will be attracted to the bait as much as possible. Other things were related to the bait palatability, how it tasted to the rats, and perhaps their willingness to eat as much of it as necessary. So there are a few things that were pointed out as potential causes that likely contributed. Just would like to mention that was a very important learning experience, and we have taken into account those things that could have contributed to the failure last time and have built it into this new approach to make sure that we achieve maximum likelihood of success.
So, Josh, are you on the phone with us now?
I am, yeah. I apologize for the technical difficulties.
No worries.
So I'm not sure how much of the project background you've already discussed.
Well, where we were just at, so you might be able to pick up with this, and then we want to have maybe we'll be hearing from you, from the Division of Forestry and Wildlife, the full project background. But what we were just discussing was the failures of last time, you know, like looking at going, we did it 4 or 5 years ago and it didn't work. You know, why do we think it's going to work this time? And, you know, Patty was helping to explain some of the issues, like it was in the rainy time of year. And maybe the rats were less hungry as well, too. But why don't you give us the state's perspective on what the goals are here and the background of the project.
Sure. So Lehua Islet is of great interest to the Department of Land and Natural Resources in large part because of its potential as habitat for seabirds. And a lot of the seabirds in Hawaii are, of course, threatened and endangered. And they have low breeding numbers because Hawaii has a lot of issues with invasive species. And Lehua, as the small offshore islet, if we can remove some of those invasive species from the environment, would be an amazing breeding site potentially for these species that elsewhere in Hawaii, they're just not able to have a breeding population. So Lehua has been the subject of discussion amongst a lot of conservation partners, including Department of Land and Natural Resources, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, U.S. Department of Agriculture, for over a decade now. And one of the first efforts to start restoring Lehua to its native habitat in terms of, you know, lack of predators that would allow these bird species to breed on the island, was to remove rabbits that were previously on the island.
How did
and
they get there?
Rabbits were removed in 2005, 2006 with the help of Island Conservation. And after that, the focus turned to removing rodents from the islands. And as you mentioned, the first attempt to remove rodents from the island was in 2009.
And how did the rabbits get there?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
How did the rabbits get there?
That's a good question. I actually don't have that off the top of my head. But,
that's hard to get. Yeah.
For rabbits, they were probably a mistaken introduction by someone who meant well. You know, the history of Hawaii, unfortunately, predates our understanding of invasive species as an ecological concept. And so oftentimes, the 1800s, even early 1900s, people were moving species around the state thinking that it was a really good thing to have, you know, ungulates in certain habitats or rabbits in certain areas. And we didn't know at the time what the ecological impact would be. So my guess is that rabbits were probably somebody's the intention to bring to Lehua that didn't work out. Rodents were likely an accidental introduction to the island.
Is there a lot of grasses on the island?
Yes. Yeah, there are grasses on the island.
And I might be totally misinformed. My understanding is Lehua Island is utilized as target practice also by the military. Is that, Melee's shaking her head no. Is that incorrect?
No, I think you're thinking of another island. So Kaula Rock,
okay,
which is south of Niihau, that's been used as target practice in the past. Lehua does not have a history of being used as target practice. It's been used by the U.S. Coast Guard for a lighthouse station, and then it has been managed by DLNR as a wildlife sanctuary.
And what kind of birds are there there? I'm assuming albatross and eva. And I mean, which ones are there? Shearwater? Mm-hmm. I mean, what birds are there?
So there's black-footed albatross and Laysan albatross. Known to be breeding on the island, as well as Bulwer's petrel, red-tailed tropic bird, brown booby, red-footed booby. There's also some species that have been seen on the island. We don't know for sure that they're breeding, but it's suspected that they're breeding on island, including the Hawaiian petrel, Newell's shearwater, Banrump's storm petrel, And then the exciting thing about Lehua is that, again, because it's isolated and it presently only has this one mammalian predator, this species of rat, if we remove that, it could potentially be a breeding site for species that haven't been seen out there, you know, in recorded history. And so there's the potential for other native Hawaiian bird species to be introduced to Lehua and use that as a breeding habitat.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. Right now we are speaking with Josh. What is your last name, Josh?
Atwood.
Atwood from the Division of Forestry and Wildlife calling in from Oahu. And we have two people, Mele and Patty, from Island Conservation. They're the contractors working to eradicate the species of rat there. So, Josh, how big is Lehua Island? Like miles across?
It's not terribly large. It is, let's see.
I can jump in here.
Find the information here.
It's exactly 285 acres.
285 acres?
Thank you, Millie.
Yes.
Okay, so it's not very big. But it sticks up, right? How it's do you know the elevation of it?
Yeah, it's about 700 feet high.
Yeah,
so it's pretty significant, especially when you think of it in context of the northwestern Hawaiian islands, which are very, very low-lying
atolls
that are very much in danger of you know, inundation from climate change and sea level rise.
Or even a big wave, a big swell, a tidal wave, anything like that.
Yeah,
like
hurricanes.
It comes
absolutely.
In and it washes away all those nesting birds.
Yeah, and if you've ever, you know, seen pictures of the bird colonies on Midway Atoll, I mean, there are so many birds out there. They're practically shoulder to shoulder. And, you know, where are all those birds going to go?
So when we look at Lehua, is there a sand beach around it at all?
No, it's a rocky shoreline.
And do the seals hang out there?
Yeah, some seals do. Niihau next door has a very large number of seals, and Lehua is home to a handful.
And then how about the turtles? Are they around there quite a bit? I'm just wondering, like, if these pellets, you know, if they will wash out in and the animals feed on them.
The likelihood of marine species feeding on the pellets directly is really low. I mean, the pellets will be applied to the land. However, you know, it is possible some may get in the water. You know, monk seals feed on fish, and sea turtles feed on limu.
Do the fish feed on the pellets, and then the other animals feed on those fish and then get the bleed out?
We actually looked at that. We did a trial run about a year ago, and so we were putting inert bait onto the island, and so there's no rodenticide, and it's just a cereal mm-hmm. grain, basically, just to do a trial run of the logistics if we were going to try to do this rodent removal again. And we did try to observe whether or not there were fish species interacting with the bait, and there were a couple that would kind of nibble at it, but it's not something that seems to be, you know, really attractive to the fish. And lab studies have shown that when you add in the rodenticide compound, it actually becomes very repellent to fish species.
And Josh is...
That's in particular looking at the black triggerfish.
Is... Shane on the phone with us as well?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so I wanted to allow you, you know, to just really want to appreciate all of you for reaching out to Kauai Community Radio for help reaching out to the population. I didn't chase you guys down. You guys came to us. That's wonderful. A lot of times when there is a little bit of conflict, I have to really encourage somebody pretty hard to come in, and this is a really great way to get the facts out. Shane, you're with the United States Department of Agriculture, is that correct?
Yes, I'm with the Hilo Field Station of the National Wildlife Research Center, which is part of USDA. So I live and work in Hilo, and we do a lot of research mostly with respect to invasive species issues in the Hawaiian Islands and also in the Pacific Basin, including Guam.
And so what is your role directly or your organization's role directly in the Lehua Project?
We've primarily been associated with trying to help island conservation in the state ensure that that the rodenticide product that they intend to use, a new formulation of a real traditional rodenticide, difasinone, but a new formulation, the cereal pellet that the difasinone goes in, it's a more attractive pellet as far as getting the rats to eat it. One of the reasons that the last eradication might not have worked or didn't work so well might have been that the baits weren't as what we call palatable or tasty as they could have been. So we've done some cage trials here in Hilo with Hawaiian Ratisexilans, the Polynesian rat, the same one that's on Lehua, to make sure that the product that Island Conservation and the state intend to use, to make sure it is actually effective at killing all rats. And we did actually have 100% successful cage trials with this product, and the palatability of it, or the amount of the stuff that the rats actually chose to eat, was really high. So that goes to boost our confidence that we've got a better chance of doing it completely this time. And then we also provide a lot of chemical analysis services. So we're going to be monitoring the we haven't determined yet exactly what samples we'll be taking, but we'll be taking some environmental samples, fish samples, before and after the upcoming eradication attempt, mm-hmm. if it happens, to help monitor to see if and how much the rodenticide ingredient does get into food webs or what we call environmental compartments of the environment out on Lehua.
So am I interpreting it correctly when I hear that your support that the federal government is helping somewhat in the costing of this? It's not as much set on just the state? Is the feds helping with the funding?
Yeah, I would say that our role is at least I won't speak for Fish and Wildlife Service here. Maybe Josh can speak better for Fish and Wildlife Service's role. But for USDA, our involvement has been mostly the free providing of our technical expertise. We were commissioned or paid by Island Conservation to offset the costs of us running the lab trials, because it's expensive stuff, an expensive project. So we want to make sure we get it right. So yes, so there is some what we call in-kind contribution of the federal government in us donating some time. And then for some of the services our lab provides, including chemical analysis, those are services that we have agreements for payment for.
Felicia, we had a caller.
I'll just chime in that it's a similar relationship with the Fish and Wildlife Service. They're providing their time and their expertise on the project. They're a federal cooperator for the project, but the bulk of the operational funding is coming from a portion of it's from the state, and then a large part of it's from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation.
And Marshall, you had a caller with a question?
Yes, we had a caller who wanted to suggest that there is a relatively innocuous rat poison called RatX with the active ingredient sodium chloride, and wondered if anybody had heard of that.
Well, I'll just note that sodium chloride is salt, you know, it's the same as table salt. And so, you know, anything can be toxic to rats at certain concentrations. And so, you know, that's something that, depending on the formulation, you probably could use to kill rats in certain situations, but would likely not be something that we consider for a large-scale operation like this.
Yeah, just to add to that, Josh, it is important to consider that the two rodenticides that are being put forward as alternatives for this project have been used in islands, like Lehua, larger, smaller, you know, steep, and all over the world successfully and safely as well. So, on the other hand, salt and other compounds that can have an effect depending on concentration have not been shown successful at that level.
And I'm just going to comment that I can see who all's listening, and so we have listeners from Oahu, Hawaii, Maui right now, in addition to Kauai. And so it looks like there's an interest beyond just this island. Is these practices being utilized on Koholawe or any of the other islands that are out there, or even up in the Northwest Pacific Islands?
Yeah, I can start that response for the state and then defer to some of the other partners here who work on rodent control projects. But, you know, this type of rodent control effort is nothing new. For aerial application of rodenticide in the state, this has been done before for Mokapu Outlet off the north shore of Molokai. And then, again, there was the attempt in 2009 to remove rodents from Lehua, which did reduce the number of rodents. It just didn't get all of them, and so that remaining population has repopulated the island. But the concept of utilizing this approach to remove rodents is really standard nowadays in conservation. I think Island Conservation may want to weigh in on other successful case studies that this has been used in.
I want to ask you guys all real quick, too. She's going to respond to that. But are all of you going to be at Keikaha Neighborhood Center on April 3rd from 7 to 9? Will visitors who come to, I mean, people who come to that public event, they will hear from Division of Forestry and Wildlife. Will the U.S. Department of Agriculture be there along with both of you?
Yes.
I'm on the fence at the moment as to if I can get it to fit in with my schedule.
Okay, that's USDA. Okay, and Patty?
I'd just like to clarify real quick. It's actually from 5 to 7.
5 to 7, okay. 5 to 7, that's
Monday,
important.
The 3rd of
what did
April.
I say? I said 7 to 9. 5 to 7 p.m., very important. 5 to, in the Neighborhood Center.
Keikaha Neighborhood Center.
And people who would be most interested in coming to this is probably fishermen. I know that last time when you guys did this event in 2009, there was a big fish kill, and, you know, people at least wondered if there was a corollary.
Yeah, that was a common topic at the public meeting we had in Waimea a couple weeks ago. We had a meeting on March 14th, and people are, you know, obviously concerned that there might be a connection between rodenticide and the fish kill. And so what we shared at that meeting is that there were a number of fish tissue samples taken from the fish that were part of that fish kill, and difasinone, which is the rodenticide that was used in the attempt to remove rodents from Lehua in 2009, was not found in those fish. All of the best science that we can use to look at what happened surrounding that fish kill indicates that there is not a connection between the 2009 attempt to remove rodents from Lehua and the fish kill that happened on the south shore of Niihau.
So a question that
some evidence that some blue-green algae were found in the fish, which are known, this algae is known to be toxic when it blooms at times, and it's not unusual for there to be a fish die-off associated with a toxic algae bloom. So That's a far more plausible explanation for that fish die-off than any effect from the Lehua eradication.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that, you know, fish kills happen as, you know, not necessarily due to man-made activities, but it's, you know, something that occurs from time to time. We just had a fish kill a couple of years ago off the west coast of Oahu, and you know, the fact that it was coincidentally timed around the rodent removal attempt, I think, has rightfully raised a lot of questions in people's minds about whether or not those two events are connected. But again, our best available science is that they are not.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. We have Josh Atwood, from Division of Forestry and Wildlife, and Shane. What's your last name, Shane?
Sires.
Sires from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Patty Bio, and Mele Khalsa from Island Conservation. What we were almost at a couple times in here, we were looking at what is going to be different this time. So we learned that instead of during the time of heavy rain, it's going to be a time in the summer in a drier time. Last time it was applied in a helicopter. Is it being applied a helicopter this time and only in a helicopter?
The methodology there is going to be used on Lehua would be broadcast aerial broadcast using a helicopter and it would be supplemented with hand broadcast on challenging areas. We have some pretty steep slopes and caves and other places that it may be difficult to get bait through with the helicopter, so we may have additional hand broadcasts in particular specific areas.
So you can do the hand broadcast after the aerial?
Correct. Or
and they won't hurt the people down there?
No, it will not.
And then who's going to do it? Are you going to do it?
Some of us will. So we will be on the ground.
Is that you?
I will be there.
You'll be there? Okay. Yes. So, I mean, that actually really matters to me. It matters to me a lot. So I'm talking to the person who's going to be there with it in her hands.
Yep.
And broadcasting it. And, hey, high five women for just a moment, because it's usually not presumed that it's going to be females doing this. So you are going to be there. You wear gloves. I mean, what do you look like when you're in there?
Yeah, so there are protective equipment that we wear. Gloves is one of them. In the operation team, many of us will be some of us will be handling the baits. Some of us will be doing other jobs. They are just equally as important. But you do have equipment for the people that are handling the bait specifically. They have suits and gloves, and Mele can probably talk more to that.
Are you going to be on the island too? Are you going to be doing it, Mele?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be there.
This is Shane piping in a little bit. It's important to note that the baits that they're talking about using, while the active ingredient is powerful when ingested for rodents, it's really at very low concentrations in the pellets. This stuff isn't like nuclear waste. This is actually really safe to work with. It's been used in agricultural settings and really for rat control, in human health, in human dwelling areas, for human health purposes. These things, there's nothing particularly scary about these baits. Just like any prescription medication, you know, the active ingredient's powerful, but we treat it with respect, and at the low doses that it's included in these baits, it's the risk to humans from handling these baits or even accidentally coming across, you know, some of the pellets is really low, because the concentration of the active ingredient is really low. It's only when the rodents eat the stuff in high quantities over a long enough period of time that it becomes lethal to the rodents.
So we have a caller to ask a question. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. So what is your question? Thank you.
Well, are rats native to this island? Were they introduced by humans?
Well, they're not native.
I can take that one. This is Josh with DLNR. They were introduced by humans.
Okay, that's good. That's what I suspect, right? Which has happened in numerous places in the world, right? You know, human.
That's correct, caller. So do you have a follow-up?
Human mistakes, like bringing the mongoose to Hawaii, for example, right? Or the cane toad to Australia.
So do you have a follow-up question?
When you do go on this killing spree, you know, because for some reason there's got to be something good about a rat. I don't know what it is, right? You know, I understand where you're coming from, you know, overpopulation of rats, the ecology of this little island, the birds, the nesting birds, et cetera, right? But I just want to remind you to have a little, you know, say a prayer if you believe in such things. When you do spread out all this toxic poison, that you wish you wouldn't have to have had to do this. do you want to have a little compassion because rats are sentient beings just like elephants or Bengal tigers and humans, right?
So you know, thank you, caller.
So don't be like the Pied, even though it would be nice if you could hire a Pied Piper. You know,
Danny, thank you for calling.
And guide them off to their own little island where only rats can live happily ever after, right? Because it's sad when you have to go on killing sprees of any sort, even though, you know, obviously germs like malaria.
Danny.
You'd gladly kill all the malaria in the world and you wouldn't bat an eye, you know? You wouldn't go, wow, that's
Danny.
Bad, all these...
Danny, thank you.
Have to die.
Thank you for
but
calling.
It's just a point of view.
Okay.
Hi, Danny. This is Shane. I would like to let you know that from what I know personally of all the people working together on this, the reason we're in this is because we do care about animals and wildlife, and there's nobody on the team that we work with that has any inclinations to cruelty. We do everything as respectfully and professionally and as humanely as possible. So I appreciate that concern, and it is something that we do all think about.
Yeah, and he's definitely loves animals very deeply. And what you guys missed is I mentioned it in the beginning of the show. My dog had eaten a rat that apparently had eaten the poison, and my dog bled out. And it was, you know, about 4 really traumatic hours, and we couldn't save her. So it can have... it can have a ramification, and I would appreciate that he appreciates the rats. I think they're Polynesian rats, right?
Correct.
They've been here for a long time.
They have been here for a long time, and I just would like to add to Shane's comments that there's nothing intrinsically wrong about the rats. You know, they're just not native to the Hawaiian Islands, to Lehua, and where they're not native, they can cause extreme detrimental effects to the native species. So the intent here is to protect and promote native populations of seabirds and other native species to thrive.
So I think we're going to take another caller in just a moment. Okay, aloha, thank you. You're on the air.
Hi, Felicia.
Hi.
Yeah, I have a question. Earlier, I think it was Patty used the phrase maximum likelihood of success. And I'm wondering, and anybody can answer, what is the definition, what is your definition of success, and what is the likelihood of achieving that success? And thanks, I'll take the answer off the air.
So I'll respond to that, and the partners here can chime in and add to it. But so what we mean by maximum likelihood of success is to ensuring that the operational and the methodology that is being applied has a high likelihood of success that we can from all the times that has been done in the past and the many islands that it has been done in the past, all the lessons learned and all of the things that we know are applied to the operational planning so that we can achieve the maximum likelihood. It is unfortunately not possible for us to ensure it will be 100% successful because we don't have a crystal ball, but we can ensure that we can do everything that we know possible to make it as likely to be successful.
And success would be 100% eradication, no more rats.
That's correct.
So anything short of that would you call unsuccessful?
Correct.
Yeah.
And have you all been on Lehua Rock already? Or
yes.
Lehua Island, I need to not call it a rock.
Yes,
so
we have.
So tell us about it. I've never been there. What is it like?
Well, Mele has spent quite a bit of time there, actually, during the past year, so maybe she can share with us a little more.
Yeah, so Lehua is a really special place. It's an uninhabited island, and it's really just all birds and, native and introduced plant species. And there are so many birds out there. There's such a great diversity already. And it has the potential to hold a whole lot more. So it's a really amazing and diverse place, and it has the potential to be even more so.
We have another caller. Aloha, you're on the air, KKCR.
Oh, yes, I want to thank your participants for the work that they're planning. I just was going to ask and see when this happens and the populations recover, when my Hawaiian kids are going to be able to go out there and harvest their traditional foods, particularly the u'au and the a'o.
Okay.
Yeah, I can take that from DLNR. This is Josh. And so the current proposed project, we're looking at trying to remove rats off the island this summer. And as far as, you know, when you can go back there and harvest, there's no proposed prohibition on accessing the island. You know, we're going to talk to the community about when the project is happening, and then after that, it is still owned by the U.S. Coast Guard and operated by DLNR as a wildlife sanctuary, but the intertidal zone is public property where you can go and do traditional gathering anytime you like.
I'd just like to follow up with that, though, and say that the u'au and the a'o are the Hawaiian petrel and the Newell Shearwater, and both of those are covered under the Endangered Species Protection Act. So until their populations rebound to a level where they are no longer federally protected, I don't think they're going to be opened up to harvest.
Yes, thank you. So for whom are you
doing this? If it's not Hawaiians and propagating their traditional food resources on these islands,
well, there is a traditional food resource aspect to this. I think that the primary reason for the project, from DLNR's perspective, is our mandate to protect Hawaii's natural resources. So, allowing those native bird populations to rebound is the primary outcome here. But one of the things that we do expect as a secondary outcome from the project is that with rats removed from the island, there should be more abundant resources in the intertidal zone, such as okihi and crabs. And again, that is something that you know, has a gathering aspect to it for human consumption.
Can people on a boat, like on a fishing boat, go and be on the island and experience the island?
Not above the high water mark for high tide. So, but the intertidal zone is open to the public.
So I'm paying you guys to do this. I can't go there, and my kids can't go harvest their traditional food. I'm at a loss to understand why we're doing this then.
Well, again, as Millie noted, the bird species on the island are protected by state and federal law because their numbers are so low. So it's something that we're not trying to prohibit an action there that is tied directly to consumption, but the protection is there for the bird species themselves.
For the birds themselves.
That's right.
Conservation of the species. Our caller is a very intelligent man who knows a whole lot about the interrelation of the environment. So, caller.
Well, I think they've sufficiently answered my question, Felicia. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
So, thank you, everybody. I want to again really emphasize that people can go and learn directly from the people in the show here. Josh, are you coming? You're going to come over? I know
yes,
that Sherry Mann will be
there. Yes, I'll be there on April 3rd, and I don't know if you covered this before I was able to join the discussion, but I want to point out that in addition to going to the meeting on April 3rd, anybody who's listening, part of the reason we're encouraging these discussions now is that the draft environmental assessment for the proposed project is online, and there's an open comment period for it. So if you would like to review the entire environmental assessment document that describes the project and what some of the proposed alternatives are, You can go onto our website for the project and then submit a comment. The comment period for the state ends on April 7th. So you can send us either a written letter or an email and kind of let us know your opinion on what the alternatives are. And in that document, it's described there's three proposed alternatives. The first is no action. The second is the preferred alternative we've been discussing, which is an aerial application of difasinone with the option for a follow-up of another rodenticide called bertificolm if the difasinone for some reason doesn't work. And then the third option described in the document is using the second rodenticide I mentioned, bertificolm, but it would, again, be an aerial application. So we're really encouraging people to take a look at that document and let us know what your feedback is of those proposed alternatives. And the website where we're hosting all this information is dlnr.hawaii.gov/wildlife/lehua.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. And we are discussing the rodenticide with the Division of Forestry and Wildlife, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and contractors, Island Conservation, who manage this worldwide. I also want to give out Sherry Mann, who is the Division of Fish and Wildlife here. She's so open to having feedback and discussion, and her office number is 274-3436. And I think the group most being stretched out to is the fishermen. I believe we have another caller on the air. Aloha, thank you for holding.
How's it going?
Good.
Yeah, about this lehua stuff, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I addressed my questions to Island Conservation. What is your name again?
We have Mele and Patty.
Whatever was that lady's name.
Mele is the island person from Kauai.
How many
Kauai
projects?
Patty?
How many projects had actually failed?
How many eradication projects worldwide?
Have failed.
Yeah. How many actual projects had failed?
The likelihood of success.
What is that? I cannot hear you.
The rate of success is very high for both the use of difasinone and bertificolm.
How many projects had failed?
Right. So the rate of success is about 90% for the rodenticide use all over the world. So for every 100 islands, about 10 will fail.
And how many have you worked on? Have you done 100 islands?
We have been involved with many eradications.
But, I mean, many is how much? 25, 50? I think what he's asking is can you give him an example where there's failure? Or maybe you don't actually know that answer. Do you know that there was a problem could you give an example of a failure?
I can give some of those numbers that he's looking for. We've been involved in 56 eradications, and one of them has failed.
Only one project had failed.
That Island Conservation has been involved in, yes.
But they didn't do Lehua last time. It wasn't them.
Correct.
Well, who was then?
It was led by...
The 2009 Lehua attempt was a collaboration between the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the State Department of Land and Natural Resources.
Okay, so,
a few other partners.
Well, you know what, then maybe I should have basically say my question in this way, then. How many rat drop poisons had failed, then? Meaning whoever had good do you, not only Island Conservation.
So these guys might not know, but Josh, or Shane, do you have an estimate on that?
Well, I think what Patty had just stated was that basically these
sorts
of
island
eradication
here, right?
9 times out of 10 are successful, not regardless of who does them. in the early days when they were just learning the techniques, it was more failures. These days, it's nine times
four projects had failed.
Established techniques.
So, I think because you guys are both up on the same thing on my board here, it's hard for you to hear each other. So he's not hearing you.
Real
so,
hard,
so, Clayton, what he's saying is that they're, since they've changed the methodology, they're having a whole lot less failure. And so it's not really a good comparison because it is professionals coming in as opposed to, I don't want to say lack of professional, but just not specialists. We have specialists as opposed to generalists in the past. Is that a fair way to frame it, guys?
Well, probably not. I'd say that the 2009 failure wasn't because it was in the early days of learning this. That's relatively recently. I'm talking about from when these efforts, you know, first started decades ago, and a lot of these techniques were pioneered in New Zealand. So in the earlier days, outside of Hawaii, regardless of anybody working here, the failure rate was higher, and now as these techniques have been, you know, almost perfected, there have been over 400 or 500 successful small island rodent eradications, and the current numbers are that 9 out of 10 of them are successful.
Okay, so did you hear that, Clayton? He said 9 out of 10 of them are successful, you know, at this point. So it's pretty good. Clayton, did you go to the Waimea meeting?
Yeah, I went to the Waimea one.
Okay, you were there.
And then another one for Island Conservation now. This is toward them, yeah.
Okay, Island Conservation, this
Sorry
question's
about
for you.
The confusion. Okay, whatever happened to Wake Island? Because the Air Force had to do their own testing, and it was found that something had happened over there. Okay, so maybe you guys can put that on the air versus answering me, because I get in so hard time hear anybody talking. So whatever happened to Wake Island, and especially the Air Force had to do their own testing, and what did the Air Force on the government, I guess, find? So...
Okay.
This is what I like here on the air.
Okay, so you guys understand the question?
Mahalo nui. I'm going to hang up now.
Okay, mahalo for calling.
Hello.
So did you understand that question, Mele?
Wake
Island, what happened?
Yeah, so I wasn't involved in Wake Island, but I did do some research on it to prepare for this, and... there, on Wake Island, it was a birdificum operation, so they did use a rodenticide, and there was fish samples that were collected from the lagoon in Wake that did come back positive for some birdificum residues. And so the fish that were found to have residues were only in the lagoon. They were not in the open ocean outside of the island. And that of 48 fish samples that were collected, only 5 of them came back with residues. So it was a relatively low number. And it was mainly one species that did have residues in it. It was the black-tailed snapper. So they had a number of recommendations for how to handle that after the operation, and they ended up going with, I believe, the most conservative option, which was to put a fishing ban on the lagoon within the island that lasted a while. I'm not sure exactly. I'm sorry. Like I said, I wasn't involved in that project, but I did do some research.
Now I
want
to go out to that island, but people can't really get out there, right? I mean, that sounds like
Wake.
Well, not to Wake. I want to go out to Lehua Island. And
well, you can do snorkeling tours around it.
I just would like to point out that although, Clayton, we appreciate the question and the concern. Wake and Lihua are substantially different. Wake is a low-lying atoll with a lagoon. Lihua is a high-rise island with open ocean around it. As Mele is pointing out, the diphosphenone residues were found in the fish the rodenticide residues were found in the fish in the lagoon. And as you can imagine, the lagoon is a lot more confined, mm-hmm. And you would have more higher concentrations likely in the lagoon. So just keeping in mind for the listeners to keep in mind that there are intrinsic differences between the two islands that is important as we plan mm-hmm. for Lihua, and we take into account the information that came out of Wake Island, which is informative and should be taken into account, but we have to consider the differences.
Yeah, and I'd just like to mention that Wake was also a very... Wake was a very complex operation. There were multiple species that were being targeted simultaneously. And in comparison, Lehua is a relatively simple system.
And this is Josh. I just wanted to add that we actually do have good data from the 2009 attempt on what happens for diphosphenone, not for difficult, but diphosphenone in Lehua as an environment. And so after the 2009 attempt, there was standard environmental monitoring for seawater, soils, fish tissues, and all of that came back negative for diphosphenone residues. So it's just important to keep in mind that Lihua is a unique environment, and we do have a history of collecting data that's specific to that environment.
And the Ni'ihau people, because this island, Lehua Island, is right at the tip of Ni'ihau. I mean, it looks like from a distance, like you could walk from one to the other. I don't know if you can. Can you? No, they're saying no.
No, definitely not. It's a very deep channel in between.
Okay, because they look like they're almost touching. So do the Ni'ihauans, do they get to go over there and fish and be, yeah. So they're being included in this conversation, because it seems to me that they're the ones who have the highest impact on this.
Yeah, so...
go ahead, Josh.
I'll take that from DLNR initially and then turn it over to Island Conservation, because I know they've been heavily involved with the Ni'ihau community. But for DLNR's perspective, that's one of the foundational aspects of this project, this attempt at removing rodents off of Lehua. We've been working with the Ni'ihau community and the Robinsons on this project since maybe late 2012, early 2013. And the Robinsons are actually part of the steering committee for the project. So they've been great partners. We've had the opportunity to talk to some of the people who live on Ni'ihau about the project and get their feedback on it. And while, you know, Mele noted there's a very deep channel in between, we don't expect the project to have a negative impact on the people who are living on the Ihau. We do recognize that they're a really important stakeholder because of their proximity, and so we've been really valuing their participation in this process.
Okay, and are the Robinsons going to be at the meeting also in Ke Kaha?
We had Keith Robinson attended the meeting on the 14th in Waimea. I'm not sure about attendance for the April 3rd meeting.
Okay. I want to acknowledge this quality report. It's called Results of the Laboratory Testing for, how do you say it again?
Diphosphenone.
Diphosphenone in the seawater, fish, invertebrates, and soil following the aerial application of rodenticide on Lehua Island for January of 2009. I appreciate the information that you all are sharing, and I encourage anybody who is interested in this to go. It's next Monday, April 3rd, 5 to 7. And as I had it started at the beginning of this show, people could even go to Lihue, go talk to the planners from 2 to 5, leave a little early, go down to Ke Kaha and hear about it. We can all be part of these ideas together. So I appreciate you all being part of this and taking that action step to really communicate with people. And I grasp the importance of trying to invite the birds back, maybe that are the most vulnerable to the rats. And I also want to just acknowledge our caller who was conscious of the sentient being of the rats. And it's actually true. When I was a kid, I had pet rats, mm-hmm. and they ran around on my shoulders. And, you know, they are sentient beings, as most animals are. And we get that it isn't a heartless intention, and that the idea is to best be able to be protecting these indigenous seabirds that are at risk, particularly as we're having more storms and potentially sea level rise on the Northwest Hawaiian Islands that are atolls. I want to give you all a chance to give a final thought on KKCR, Hanalei Ke'ekua Kilauea. You're very much appreciated. Josh, why don't I start with you?
Sure. I just want to thank you, Felicia, for the time to discuss this on the air. Thank you to the callers and agreed. I really appreciate the comment about rodents as sentient beings. And as Shane noted, we take that very seriously, and we do try to approach this with compassion for all the species involved, including the native seabirds. And my final statement is just that we really do encourage the public to get involved in this if you're interested. And again, the full draft environmental assessment for the project is online now. It's in the Environmental Bulletin from the Office of Environmental Quality Control. And you can download a copy from our website, which is dlnr.hawaii.gov/wildlife/lehua. And we are taking comments on the alternatives proposed in that document until April 7th. But, of course, after April 7th, you can always reach out to us, and we'd be happy to talk about the project. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. And Shane?
Yeah, I'd just like to say that, the sort of project that's being proposed here is something that has been successful hundreds of times around the world. Some of the most exciting conservation gains of the last few decades have been where native species have been released from the predation pressure of rats. And where these things have been successful, there's been great conservation benefit, and they've been handled safely and professionally, and there have been no adverse human health consequences from these island eradications. And that doesn't mean we don't take the risk seriously, and we work as hard as possible to make sure that all those sorts of risks are minimized. We appreciate the concern, and we wouldn't be pursuing this if we thought it was not in the best interest of the people of Hawaii.
And it's off season for the baby whales too, right? They will have left. Not that they're really in this food chain, but they're not around. Okay, and Mele?
Thank you, Felicia, for having us on the show, and thank you, callers and listeners, for engaging in this process with us. We really do want to be as transparent as possible and get the word out there so that people know what's happening and, you know, don't feel surprised, and we really want to get your guys' feedback and comments, so please do, you know, check out our website, check out the environmental assessment, and all the alternatives that have been laid out, and give us some comments.
So that would be islandconservation.org. And I see that you guys are from Hawaii, and Micronesia is your area of influence. Patty?
Well, thank you very much, Felicia, for opening the space for us to talk about the Lehua Project. I just would like to point out, as many of my colleagues here did, that one of the main criteria for us to even engage with projects is to ensure that the conservation benefits outweighs the risks, the short-term risks of the operation. And Lehua fits in nicely within that criteria. We foresee great benefits for the birds and the native plant communities on Lehua with reasonably small risks to native wildlife and human health. So we again take those risks very seriously and are proposing the best available scientific data and options to mitigate those risks and promote Lehua as a true bird sanctuary into the future.
Great. And I'm sure Sherry Mann will be feeling better and will be at this April 3rd event, 5 to 7, Keikaha Neighborhood Center. And I thank you all. So mahalo nui for your efforts, and hopefully I will be down there as well. I look forward to seeing you.
Thank you, Felicia.
Thank you, Felicia.
Great. Thank you, Felicia.
Okay. Aloha. And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Kauai Soapbox with Felicia and Marshall, and we have extended that window of time with our callers on the air. But I really want to acknowledge our underwriters. They're so important for Kauai Community Radio being able to do things like this. And we do have a fun drive coming up in the not-too-distant future, and we'll have wave riders positions, and that's one of the ways that it really makes a big financial difference for us. So Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with The Copper Man and Second Skin.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456. PackYourTrash.org and SaveRCs.us.
Second Skin Organics Hawaiian Mosquito Shield. Safe and effective. Protecting you and your ohana since 2001. Kauai grown, GMO free, sustainable organic agriculture based solutions. Uamau ke'ea o ka'aina I ka pono. More information on their global mission and vision for Hawaii at secondskinorganics.com.
KKCR's Wave Rider program will make a huge splash during our upcoming spring membership drive starting on April 27th. For a tax-deductible donation of just $175, a brief message about your business or event will surf the airwaves during every two-hour program throughout our 14-day fundraiser. That's over 100 announcements. This is a great opportunity to promote your business or upcoming event and support Kauai Community Radio. Wave Rider forms are available at kkcr.org or call us at 808-826-7774. Early sign-up will guarantee the most airtime for your donated dollars. Reserve your spot in the lineup today.
Legendary Party of the Year, a benefit concert for Hanalei School. Starry Nights presents the Soft White 60s and DJ Doja at the St. Regis Princeville Resort on Saturday, April 8th. Doors open at 6 p.m., 21 and over. Silent and live auctions with custom items exclusive for Starry Nights. Tickets are limited and available at Hanalei Surf Company, Magic Dragon, Healthy Hut, and online. More information at 647-0188 and Hanalei School on Facebook.
Aloha, listeners of KKCR. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour, urging you to support Kauai Community Radio. KKCR has been broadcasting from their jungle shack and building community in the island since 1997. Please show your love for KKCR by making an investment in the station that loves you. Your support at any level will pay dividends all year long and ensure the continued success of Kauai Community Radio. From our family at Democracy Now! To your ohana in the center of the Pacific, mahalo for your support. It really does make a difference.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. The listeners are so very important to us, and we are really, really honored to just have had the Division of Forestry and Wildlife on here. We are looking forward to doing a number of future shows with different primary source providers. That's one piece that's a really good part of what we're able to do here, is to be bringing in the people that are really responsible for some of the policy decisions or issues that are here. But we also like to hear from you at 826-7771. So please feel very free to call in and let me know what is on your mind. And I know really from both the island to across the islands to the country and the world, there is so many things going on. So we have this time open right now where you can share whatever you would like to share, bring up any particular topic. The general plan, that brought up a lot of big issues. One big one is that came up a lot was about adding the new neighborhood in Kapa'a and the traffic that can be an impact right in there. And, you know, where do we find houses? How do we do our housing? So many, many different ways. And I want to play the kids for a moment here from Kovaikini. You know, we just had Prince Kuhio Day, a very important person in our island's history, then very, very much was able to transition into that difficult time of the overthrow and still went on to be representing Kauai in the new legislature. And Kovaikini did their fun drive this weekend as a Prince Kuhio event.
This word of the day is brought to you by Nahamana o Kovaikini, the students of Kovaikini. Hi, my name is Hanole. Today I will be talking about the fish ahi, or in English, tuna. The spelling of ahi is okina ahi, or in English, okina ahi. Here is a Hawaiian saying about ahi. Pololea kawaha oke ahi, straight to the mouth of the ahi fish. The translation of the meaning of this saying is directly to the mouth, used in a fisherman's prayer to the gods to take the hook and bait directly to the mouth of the ahi. Mahalo.
Wonderful. So we would like to hear from you at 826-7771. You can let us know what is on your mind and what makes the biggest difference to you. We also have the budget is underway for the county council, so they have been working for Thursday, Friday, Monday, today, very much on the budget. It's a very big issue, difficult to manage. You know, we all need things, and our infrastructure is getting tired, and the requirements to be building anything and everything continues to get more and more expensive. So that is a very serious challenge. So you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall. So Marshall, have you been following much of the national stuff going on? It's got a lot happening.
Oh, there's so much. I'm glued to it. It's amazing.
Yeah. So we're going to take this caller, and then we'll talk a little bit about that too. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hey, Felicia. Great show.
Thank you.
No feedback?
I was hearing some feedback.
Oh, okay. anyhow, my message was to say that it's kind of funny how we got a president that is very unpopular, and every time you, open up social media, somebody's slamming a guy, and yet we seem to still be floating along. I mean, He might be something that's not proud of, but something that motivates us to be more responsible for our own actions and, you know, how we spend our money, how we live our lives. I just hope he doesn't get us into another war.
Right. Do we need an eighth war? But, yes. And, you know, there's a lot of inertia in government, so when decisions are made or actions are made. I'm personally really happy that this new Health Care Act did not eclipse the Affordable Care Act, what's known as Obamacare, because if you leave somebody in the lurch, if there's a year gap, a lot can happen for some people who are in vulnerable health times. So it's good that that change didn't happen. But a lot of times, even when these changes do happen,
Bernie summed it up pretty good. Just because health care is accessible doesn't mean it's affordable.
That's exactly correct. That'd be a case in point on that.
So, wishing everybody a beautiful Hawaiian sunset, and love the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for listening.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Yeah, well, it used to be you'd only heard the word single payer and Medicare for all coming from Bernie Sanders, but apparently now it's kind of caught on that it makes a whole lot of sense. It seems like people actually paid a little bit of attention to what the Republicans were trying to do with health care in this country.
Well, what were they trying to do? Because it didn't seem like they had a plan that I tried to look. It didn't seem like it was that they had a very good plan.
Well, they had a detailed bill, yeah.
But it basically cut a lot of people out of their health care.
Yeah, the plan was to take away health care from the poorest, the most vulnerable, and give that money to the richest in the form of tax breaks directly, and also to reduce the deficit of the budget, but then use those savings for more tax breaks. So essentially, they're taking all the money from all the poor people and giving it to all the rich people and devastating our healthcare system in the meanwhile. That's what they wanted to do. And that's why it didn't go down.
Right. Yeah. That's pretty. I've watched a number of the pieces where it didn't feel like he even understood what he was putting out there, though.
No, he did not understand.
Okay, because I was listening to him talk about it, and it seemed like he was so vague. I mean, I probably could do as good a job at describing what it was.
Sure. And the most conservative Republicans in the House, the Freedom Caucus, had that problem exactly. They could not negotiate with him because he didn't know enough about what was in the bill to talk about it coherently. They were disgusted and could get nowhere.
Well, it certainly is a very interesting dynamic. And then when we look at the appointment of the new Supreme Court justice, I saw where the 8 sitting justices nixed Neil Gorsuch. They said they didn't want him. And to have an 8, a unanimous decision, a voice against that, I didn't even think the other justices were supposed to be giving an opinion.
I have not seen this, Felicia. Where did you see that?
You know, maybe it wasn't a good enough news source because it was, I saw it, you know, on the internet, actually.
I'd really be surprised if sitting Supreme Court justices gave an opinion on whether or not
we better double check that one. Definitely watched something and it was a whole report on it, but maybe it wasn't a well-informed report because I thought, wow. And so how is that going?
Well, I mean, there's this underlying concern that Supreme Court seat was stolen. You know, it was just stolen. There was absolutely no...
Stolen from the last president in the last Congress.
Yeah. He nominated a very moderate, very acceptable judge for that position who... had been approved in the past for other positions in a bipartisan way. Nobody really had a problem with him, and they decided just not to let President Obama choose a Supreme Court justice because he was in his last year. And there's no precedent for that, and there's no constitutional reason for that. So that seat is stolen, and to allow a very conservative judge to take its place and to sentence this country to a conservative majority court for the foreseeable future, that's a pretty big deal, and some Democrats are not having it.
Well, it seems like our Democrats are pretty soft on all of this. Have you been following that?
Our
delegation from Hawaii.
No, but you know what? I really... the single-payer issue, it's being said that if the states will take the lead on that and individual states pick up single-payer system, that could become a model for the country, and it's a way that we could ease into it. So I was wondering, would there be a chance for us to go that way?
In Hawaii?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I've seen that the discussion is out there. I've certainly seen that it is being floated on the internet. You know, I think the big difficulty in all of that is who gets lost in the crunch is the insurance companies, some of whom are very well established, and so it's a very big shift. And so I think we got a caller. Yep. Aloha, you're on the air. Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, Felicia, how you doing?
Good.
You know, my volume level is not all that great. Hang on one second, and I shall fix things. You know, interestingly enough, now, did you hear over the weekend that Anthony Weiner has officially entered the witness protection program?
No, and Anthony Weiner was a New York representative who got in trouble for sexting.
He is Uma Abedin's husband.
Yes, who was a close ally with Hillary Clinton.
Well, I don't know about that, but he is married to her, you know,
That's what I'm just saying. Her head helper, Hillary Clinton's head helper, is getting divorced from Anthony Weiner.
So did you also see over the weekend that at the behest of, I think it was the Intelligence Committee, they dug up, who am I thinking of? Vince Foster.
Mm-hmm. Who was ostensibly suicide. It was a questionable suicide during Bill
so they
Clinton's
have already
time.
Re-examined Vince Foster's body and discovered, oh, two bullet holes in the back of his head.
Okay, that came up this weekend? Really?
I just wanted to throw that out there, that they're not done with the Clintons yet. And we might as well add that to your discussion list.
Okay.
So I'll keep listening. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. All right. And you are free to call in at 826-7771. I'm curious what is most important to most of you, anybody. We have a number of things that have come up. One that I'm trying to work on to get, I'd like to be talking to the development that is happening up here in Princeville. That's called the Princeville Lodge. You brought that up at the beginning.
Right. Oh, it's a beautiful place. It's just so nice down there.
It is really beautiful. And I believe that's basically on the footprint of what was the Club Med. Do you know if that's accurate?
I believe that's the case. I don't know for sure. But, you know, if they do develop that, there will still be public access, right?
I feel almost certain that there would still be public access. It's just the impact is kind of high on people looking at it. The 80 units is definitely a step down from, 500 or, something like that. So I appreciated that Jeff Stone wrote a statement in the paper in the Garden Island last week. I don't really remember much of that being an action that he takes directly. So I was happy to see that. I think that we have, so much impact on our roads already. So, but here's a positive. I live a half a block from the Kilauea Lighthouse Village that is under construction now, and I know that I've never really been too concerned about the construction of that project, but people were like, it's going to tie up the road, and there's sort of a dirt road access to be able to get to the highway to not tie up Kilauea Road, and it really hasn't. It really hasn't been much of an impact at all.
The construction itself.
The construction, right. Yeah, it really hasn't been. And even when we were going to have the trees cut along Kuhio Highway, that was going to be a very big deal. And it was relatively low impact comparatively to what it could have been. So a lot of times we really worry about things and it's just not as bad as it seems.
Right. So does the plan for the Lighthouse Village include a bypass road that goes down from that current dirt road to the lighthouse without going through the center of town?
That is on the plan. And the Hayes, that's the landowners right there, they have been wonderful enough to subdivide the property specifically so that road could be put in there. But it is not the responsibility of the shopping center to actually pave that road. So I think that that's the county has to do that. And a part of it is not, it's not just up to the shopping center to place that in there, because wherever it does access onto the highway, it can, it has the potential to create accidents, or, you know, you have to really sit there and look at it. Larry Dill from the Department of Transportation, the Highways Division for the state, he used to be the engineer, the county engineer for Kauai. He came to the last Kilauea Neighborhood Association meeting, and, you know, there was discussion on maybe putting roundabouts there, and, you know, it's really important for citizens to be able to voice up when that ask is out there. There's not a lot of monies, so it's a little bit of a challenge.
Mm-hmm. So do we know what stores we're going to have there in the Lighthouse Village?
Well, it's going to be the Market at Kilauea, which is a foodland sort of like boutique store, their mid-sized store. And I know Verde's is going in there. Kauai Community Federal Credit Union is going to be in there. There's going to be a handful of things like that.
A hardware store, maybe?
The hardware store, I do not believe, is going to be moving there any longer. It's been a little too long. That was part of the plan. And Jazz with John is coming up at 6 o'clock. And John, since you're in here, you guys have a pancake breakfast coming up pretty soon.
Yes, we do.
When is the Lions on the North Shore going to do the pancake breakfast?
I will give you that information.
He's going to give us that information. And I want to do a really big shout out to the Lions, because they do scholarships. And some of what this money goes for is student scholarships. And is the deadline over, John, for this next season for the Lions Club scholarships?
Right now, and we... Yeah, the deadline is coming up real close, and we have a very low number of applicants this year for a change. So check the Lions website. You can sign up and apply on the website.
So what's the website called?
Kauai North Shore Lions dot whatever. Just Google North Shore, Kauai North Shore Lions, and it'll come up.
Yeah, so that's a really good thing. And what I want to say, too, when the Lions came and talked to us, is that you don't have to be 17 years old to be applying for that. You can be returning to the workforce. You can be whatever age. When you have a good idea and a commitment behind it, the Lions are...
It's the 23rd of April is the pancake breakfast.
Okay, the 23rd of April. That's a Sunday morning, and it is at Hanalei School. So they do great programs.
Sounds good.
Yeah. And we have the Early Bird Special is happening for supporting Kauai Community Radio.
From now until the start of our spring membership drive on April 27th, we encourage you to participate in our Early Bird Drive. All Early Bird Drive contributors will be entered into our Early Bird Drawing for a chance to win either a 4-foot-tall monkey pod ku tiki or a ni'ihau shell lei with matching earrings set in a koa frame from Hawaiki Oceanic and Tribal Art Gallery, located in Hanalei Center. Mahalo nui to Hawaiki Oceanic and Tribal Art Gallery for their generous donation to our Early Bird Drawing winner. Our goal for this drive is $70,000. Help us get there by making a sustaining or one-time donation today. For more information on these incredible Early Bird Drawing prizes and to donate securely online, visit kkcr.org or call 826-7774.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. And we have, you know, we're coming to an end window, really, in our time for the state legislature. A lot of things have been coming down with the state legislature. And one of the things I tend to look at is capital.hawaii.gov. And I go in and I look at, you know, what's coming up each day the next day, because it really makes a huge difference when the community voices in. Even when people hear 2, 3, 4 calls, calling in is better than just about any other way. But with our capital.hawaii.gov, you can go in and your testimony is on public record for anybody to see. So it really does make a difference. The next step.
It would be really nice if they could actually set up a video call feature on that website. You could testify via video.
Well, I think streaming testimony has been requested for years. And, you know, the side of me that has trouble with the fact that they don't do it, you know, I feel like, well, they probably don't do it because then they would be hearing from so many people and they don't want to hear from so many people. So I think it becomes a natural limiting factor. But it's really unfortunate because the neighbor islands, it's a long way to go to fly over, get your transportation there and back. It's really a very big deal. So, so have you been following what our our U.S. legislator people are doing? How about you, John? What's the most important thing to you these days?
I'm not so worried about the locals. I am the national situation.
So what's your thought on that?
I think the United States is going into one of the most trying, challenging periods in the history of the country. This president will certainly test the quality and the validity of the documents put together by our founding fathers. If we can survive this, we can survive anything.
I think you're not really understating it.
I don't think so either.
It is, it's hard to watch. It's pretty hard to watch.
It's pretty hard to watch, but I'll tell you, last Friday was pretty cool. It was a lot of fun. Yeah, for anybody who has been really disturbed by what is happening in Washington because you're opposed to the policies and actions of the Trump administration and the Republicans who control Congress, Friday was an excellent day. It was very nice to see them sort of collapse, crash and burn.
That's a kind of a fun way to frame that. And John, what has been your focus?
Well, he's populated his cabinet with people that have zero experience running government. And as he's finding out, you cannot run government like a business. I was with a very large federal agency for many, many years, and they tried it once, and it just does not work.
Is that the Federal Aviation Administration?
That was. We tried it, and we did not. It did not succeed. Everybody thought it was a wonderful idea. They picked some, I don't know, it wasn't the whole agency, but certain elements of it tried to do that. The other thing is these people he's got in there, well, you know, you've heard the story of the fox in the hen house.
Yes.
Well, he's populated all our hen houses with foxes, and they don't know squat about running a government or any aspect of running a government. And you could see that in the Trump care bill, and it's just going to happen over and over again, sadly.
Well, it is a worry. I watch with the foreign policy efforts, and when I see other countries, you know, it seems like they're a little bit aghast and don't really know how to be even responding to us.
The domestic thing is one thing, but the international thing is very scary. You have two mentally ill leaders that potentially could end up in a nuclear war, and you kind of know who they are. And that's what really scares me.
Are you talking about Kim Jong-il and our very own Donald Trump? And so what is the commonly agreed upon diagnosis for him?
I read it a couple, 3 weeks ago, and I also put it in
narcissism.
It's related to narcissism, and it's actually identified mental illness. And if you read the criteria or the diagnosis, It's exact. It's absolutely exact. And what I saw somewhere, I mean, I'm not the only person that noted it. Somebody else commented, well, if you're truly mentally ill, your capability to do anything is diminished. Well,
well, I know I watched Seth Meyers is on one of the late night shows, and he did such a good job on what he called the closer look, and he would, you know, show clip after clip after clip of Donald saying one thing and then, you know, say, well, I never said that. And then the day before, he absolutely did say it. You know, it was such a conflict. It's just kind of mind-boggling. It's beyond the pale, really.
Yeah. You know, I actually heard an interesting piece on NPR today about how our brain works. Mm-hmm. If you tell a lie, it bothers your conscience less when you tell the next lie. And the more you lie, the less it bothers you, the less you recognize the fact that you are being untruthful. And you can actually just lie yourself into being a big lie machine and not even grasp it.
Or it might be imagination. You know, like if you were watching somebody change their story that bad and they were 3 years old or 4 years old, it's not actually that unusual at that age, right? They could just say one thing and then say the other and just keep changing that perspective so profoundly. Like I do a lot with kids, and so when I watch it, especially when you see the clip, you know, it reminds me of looking at a child who's just having trouble maturing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Felicia, and then, of course, you know, I hesitate to bring it up, really, because we've touched on it, but there is this little bit of a problem going on with Russia and the relationship between Trump, his people, and the Russian government intelligence agencies and the oligarchs. Have you looked into it at all?
I haven't looked into it as much as maybe I should have. I have to admit most of my focus is local, and so I'm usually coming home late from a meeting, and I just barely kind of scan these. We have a caller.
Can I put you on the air?
So we're going to take this caller. Aloha, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
I'm sorry, Felicia. That caller was upset.
Oh.
He felt that we would do better on MSNBC.
Okay. Well, they should talk.
Well, yeah, but he was upset enough to be using profanities, so it wasn't going to work out.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. So what was his upsetness, that we were not being respectful to the presidency?
I didn't go into it very far. No, he just said that we might as well be on MSNBC.
Well, that actually is meaningful to me, because when I watch MSNBC, even though I would say I trend towards the left, I hardly ever watch MSNBC anymore, because I do feel like that is, I think it's got a really heavy bias. People pick on Fox News. I think it's at least as polarizing in its bias as Fox. And what, you know, what I said when I went to the Democratic National Convention, I was shocked that I felt like the only news agencies that were being accurate was Democracy Now! And Fox. And I even made the joke with the Fox guy. I was like, gosh, I would never have thought you'd be the one that's actually telling the truth. But they were. And MSNBC was really biasing so far outside of, you know, what was actually real. But I'm to that caller, I'm sorry for upsetting you. And, you know, what I am sharing, though, is mostly I'm all focused on local pieces. I'm looking at what's going on right here. And then when I just glance for a moment at what's going on at the national level, and then especially seeing these juxtapositions of what's being said and said again and again and again and again in a very narrow window of time, where it's in complete conflict with itself. I don't feel like I'm being unfair when I'm saying that.
Well, my big concern is the man apparently cannot distinguish between the truth and otherwise. because he said so many things that were wrong. He's lied to us. He's misrepresented his views. And I find that amazing. Most people can't lie with such ease, but he bounces back and forth, and he makes promises he can't keep, and he swears he never made them after they don't work. It's a never-ending saga.
Well, the difficult thing is when it's all recorded.
Everything he does is recorded.
Yeah, and like with the caller who was angry, I appreciate you, caller. I appreciate that you call in and that you do share your opinion. It matters to me. And I know from time to time I will listen to an old show that I have done for whatever reason. And, you know, when you say it, it's there and it's recorded, and I'm not always right. And sometimes I've really thought that I had all the facts and worked on seeing those facts. But then we learned something later that reveals that it wasn't correct.
Right. So what's coming up on county council tomorrow, do you know?
Well, it's a very short, almost nothing, right?
Yeah, it's just a special council meeting. It's an executive session. They're primarily talking about the union contract. That's all there is.
Yeah, the council's working really hard right now because they're very much focused on the budget, and they will be having a public event. I don't have the date right in front of me. It's maybe a few weeks out, and it's like 5 o'clock. And very often people don't go, but hey, I want to say this. On the county website, like we're doing really good on some things. Like we're lucky with our state website, that capital.hawaii.gov. But also if people go to the county website, which is www.kauai.gov, and they have this year, yay, Treasury Department, put together a really good piece. It's like if you look down on the left side under home, it's got the resources. It's called Financial Transparency. And so if you go into the Financial Transparency area, it's got something called OpenGov website, and you can go in and almost do an if-then analysis. You can look at the specific areas. You can really be a proactive citizen. And it's got all kinds of graphs, and you can change how you want to look at the graphs. You can change the parameters.
And that's, again, at hawaii.capital.gov?
No, this is kauai.gov.
Okay,
kauai.gov.
Yeah.
And so it's really good, and the council's only 7 people, and the finance department, everybody is good people. It's just like all of us. They're all working really hard. It's hard to be on top of everything. And I would say they really do want to hear what people have to say. And if I could throw another positive out, I've been going to our council meetings, and I was a little worried, actually, that we had such a team of all the same type. I really like to see a variety of people in there, but they've been exceeding my expectations.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's nice to hear.
Yeah. They've been, I think, making a sincere effort at being fair and open to all areas of the island. A lot of times what can happen is that it can get so Lihui-centric, and they're working on it. So good job, guys. It's not everything is perfect, but good job. So we are just about at the top of the hour. We're going to have a very short county council report, and then you're going to have Jazz with John. And so we just have a moment for a final word, Marshall.
We just had such a great conversation about Lihua Island, Felicia. Thank you for bringing that together, and thank you to all those folks for coming in. And have a great week.
Yes, and I'm going to get my ticket to the North Shore Lions Club hotcakes and hula to be able to help my fellow person be able to go to school. All right. Thank you very much for listening to Kauai Soapbox on KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. Jazz with John is coming up, and here is the County Council report.